everyone. Welcome back to Red Ice Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren, RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com, our websites where we have tons of programs on tons of different topics. Today, in contrast perhaps to our recent program with Walter Block, we have an extended segment for you guys. We are talking with Dan Fogler, a stand-up comedian, actor, playwright, filmmaker, and voice artist. You might have seen him in films such as Scenic Route, Europa Report, Good Luck Chuck, Fanboys, or heard his voice in Free Birds or Mars Needs Moms. He joins us today to discuss his latest film, Don Peyote. One of the subjects in the film, Freeman, a regular guest with us, suggested that we have Dan with us to talk about the film and what things he came across in the process and lead up to making it. In the movie, Fogler plays Warren Allman, a typical, obvious everyman who is sent on an existential path of enlightenment. We'll discuss a variety of subjects ranging from conspiracy to spirituality and question how we can make the world a better place. We also ask Dan about Hollywood symbolism and possible ulterior motives of the film industry. Well, hey Dan, thank you for coming on Red Ice Radio. Good to talk to you. Hope you're doing well today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
You bet. So we've heard about the film Don Peyote from our good friend and I guess mutual friend Freeman at this point, who actually is in the film as well. So I wanted to bring you on and just talk a little bit about the film, you know, kind of why you wanted to make it and some of the process. And I guess we can get into later some of the background of what you've gone through in terms of what actually is in the film and whatnot. But give us an outline for, you know, about the film for those who don't know and have heard about it before, Dan.
Have you seen the trailer? It's online right now.
Yes, I have.
Okay, cool. What did you think of that?
It's pretty interesting. I know about Don Quixote quite a bit, and I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how the movie is modeled, if it kind of has, if it's follows the same path, if you will. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it takes a little bit from Don Quixote, and it takes a little bit from Alice in Wonderland, and takes a little bit from from all sorts of different stories.
Carlos Castaneda.
Yeah, Carlos Castaneda, and just it really just follows the hero journey of I'd say a modern prophet journey, where this guy goes down. He gets very swept up. This character that I play called Warren Allman, and he's about to get married. And he's very stressed out, and he starts to question some of his reality, and he gets into it with the world of conspiracy. And it's around the time of 2012, so there's a lot of people talking about. The world ending, is the world ending? Is it just a shift in consciousness? And because he's getting married and because he, you know, is eventually going to have a family, he wants to know what kind of world he's going to be living in. And so he gets sucked up in this conspiracy world and starts interviewing people, trying to gather as much information as possible. People like Freeman, people like Daniel Pinchbeck, and he's, you know, trying to understand, you know, what's really going on. And he gets so swept up in it. And even though everyone's telling him, like, yes, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on out there, the most important thing is to just listen to your heart and not worry, because then you'll manifest that in your life. And he doesn't listen. He gets even more and more paranoid. And even though he keeps finding these wise men who give him this sage advice, he just keeps listening to his own confused, paranoid mind. And he goes off the deep end, and he has to go through his own little shaman journey. And he gets put through the ringer. He starts questioning his reality. He starts questioning his sanity, and that's when the movie takes a very Terry Gilliam-esque, very psychedelic turn. And and he emerges on the other side, a changed man. He becomes Don Peyote, who is this this modern prophet, essentially. So this whole journey started a while ago, a couple years back. I'd say in 2010.
Right.
I just, in my own life, you know, the movie itself is basically the dial is turned up on certain anxieties that were happening in my own life. I was getting married, and if you can imagine how long it's taken us to do this film, I've gotten married, I got engaged, I gotten married, and I have a child now.
Wow.
It was a long journey.
It was mirrored kind of on your own path a little bit, or quite a bit, maybe even.
I obviously I didn't go off the deep end, but at a certain time in my life, which I call, I think a lot of people call a certain awakening. You know, you wake up and you start to say, "Wow, I'm not really in control of my life, and who is in control, and how much of our destiny is in someone else's hands." And so this happened for me, I guess around 9/11 happened. Now this is, you know, obviously going back a decade now, and at least, and when 9/11 happened, I was in New York, and I was about 15 blocks away from it. So I woke up that morning, felt it, you know, in the quake of it, and watching the news, and actually looking out my window and watching the news and looking and actually seeing it.
Right.
With my eyes, and really... it just didn't make sense to me, physically, the physics of it. And then certain things started, like, in my gut, I felt like this doesn't look right. And since then, obviously, there's been a lot of questions about the reality of that situation. So,
yeah.
You know, I remember watching on my TV, suddenly the newswoman is saying, "Tower 2 has gone down," and I'm looking out my window and I'm saying, "No, it's not. It's right there." You know, and start to question, like, wait, who gave her the go ahead to say that? And then you start to basically follow the money, you know, and that's where my interest, you know, I loved Oliver Stone movies and JFK, and I got into my love of conspiracy through that, and then 9/11 just really hit home, since it was my home. And I watched Loose Change, and I started saying, wow, there's a lot of other people out there who are questioning this thing and not buying the reality that we're being fed by the media, by our own government. And I just started to think, this is, you know, it's a patriotic duty. Now, I'm not a revolutionary, although I think the movie is very, will raise some eyebrows, definitely. You know, I'm just an artist, and I think that it's our duty as artists to at least raise a discussion about these things.
Right.
Yeah. And during the course of the movie, a lot of different movies like Loose Change, and you know, now you look on Netflix, and now you see that, you know, there's three different versions of that movie kind of questioning the mechanics on that day.
Yep.
And so, you know, I thought, okay, I'm not so far off here, kind of wanting to get to the bottom of, you know, who I really am as a, you know, as a human, like, who are, you know, the movie is all about asking these questions. Who am I? And I was turning, I was turning 33 at the time, so I was having my, you know, my prophet year, I guess, my Jesus year, you know. So
right.
I started having I guess these little epiphanies, and that was during the, I was like, you know what, I'm going through this in my life. Why not, you know, if I really want to go to the heart of this and really get some answers, I'm going to have to make a movie out of it. So I forced myself to finish it and really go on a journey with it. So literally the day that I decided that I wanted to do it, I went to my friend Michael Canzanero, who I direct, co-direct and write with. And we've made some movies together. And I said, look, you know, we don't even have money. We don't really, we haven't, you know, I knew I wanted to do the modern prophet journey. I didn't really have a script yet. And I was like, there's something in me that wants to make a movie about, you know, what's really happening now and trying to get to the bottom of 2012 and trying to get to the bottom of really trying to wake people up and say, you know, look around you. Maybe we shouldn't be swallowing this stuff that we're being fed every day.
Yeah.
And so that's where it started. And then literally, like, once I put that out into the universe, like, okay, we're going to make a movie. Literally the very next day, I walked into this place owned by my now good friend, Stuart Bronstein. He didn't own it. He was running this place called Collective Hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of like on the Bowery in Manhattan. Was Andy Warhol's garage's grandchild. You know, it was this place that was this hotbed of artists and thinkers. And so I basically walked into this beehive of this counterculture movement that was happening just before 2012. People trying to get in touch with their spirituality, and artists and people like Daniel Pinchbeck. So basically the very next day I said, I want to find this place where I shoot the first party scene where my character Warren Allman meets all these people. I literally walked into the place where I had to be in the universe for that to actually happen.
Like, right.
Daniel Pinchbeck was working out of there. And so he was the key component, really. And he led me to all sorts of brilliant, interviews, you know, Freeman, I reached out on my own, but Daniel, you know, basically led me to people like, Deepak Chopra and all these people. They make little appearances throughout the movie, as Warren starts, you know, collecting all these interviews. And,
so the character, just to clarify that, Warren, Altman, right? He's making a movie in the movie as well. That's kind of the thing. So it is literally at the same time you're on your own journey that you're making a movie about. Yeah, so
it's very movie within a movie within a meta situation within the movie. In the movie, my character Warren Allman says, "I'm going to make a documentary about." He wants to make a documentary essentially to wake people up and try to save the world. You know, before potential Armageddon. That's where he is at the first part of the movie. He's making this documentary, and he's hiding it from his fiance. He's kind of living a double life. On one side, he's going and he's looking at, you know, cake tops and you know, dresses and you know, tuxedos, and then on the other side, he's running around with his buddy Balance and collecting all these interviews out of his own pocket. And that's where the whole kind of Don Quixote feel comes in, where he's this guy who has this vision, and he's, you know, riding at windmills, and his buddy, you know, Balance, who is this very Sancho Panza kind of buffoon, is helping him make it. So you see, you know, they're going about this impossible task of instantly putting together a documentary to save the world. So that's where that came from, that Don Quixote concept. Just going on this journey with basically nothing. And that's what we had. I didn't have a budget. And everything was synchronicities. I walked into this place, which is this you know, beehive of activity, of this new age culture, and was introduced to all these people instantly. So like I basically, you know, the universe says, okay, you want to do a documentary. Here's all the components. Here's all the people you need to interview. And that just led to one interview to the next, to the next. And I just,
so sorry to interrupt, but so you didn't know that much about the people maybe per se before you actually started out making the movie and about their work and stuff. Is that correct?
Maybe I was a babe in the woods, very much like Warren, who you know, goes to a party and all these people are talking about, you know, Planet X and, you know, what's going to happen and oh no, it's a shift of consciousness. And so this chatter is already, he falls into this, you know, into this, Mad Hatter's Tea Party, and just is indoctrinated, over one night. He's given, you know, could be something laced with DMT and something that really opens his eyes, that there's maybe something beyond the veil, you know, in front of us. And he starts having these very vivid dreams, of his own future and who he becomes. And then it starts, the reality starts to mesh. So the viewer doesn't know, whether he's dreaming or not. And neither does he. And it becomes very, very trippy movie. And so then, you know, suddenly he's talking to, you know, Anne Hathaway, who is like this, you know, ex-NSA, CIA, FBI, you know, she comes to him in a dream and downloads him on all this insider information. And that kickstarts his obsession with it. We're just finding more and more information.
So what you described, you know, with 9/11 and everything else is a path that I think the majority, almost majority of people that we speak to on the program is more or less in one version of that is what people have gone through, you know, more or less. But what ends up happening is, you know, kind of what you describe in the movie as well, is that, I mean, I can't tell you how many people are struggling with the issue that either their relationships or friendships are basically, you know, falling apart because one guy or one gal is getting into, you know, whatever, chemtrails or what's in the vaccines or, you know, aliens or what have you. And I mean, it's extremely unfortunate that it ends up on that very base level, but that seems to be the case. And it's a very difficult kind of, you know, threshold to get over that. And with certain people as well, is that something you went through as well, you know, with your partner or friends or something like that?
She was very understanding, but at the beginning, yeah, it was tough. To say, you know, to discuss something like, you know, Freemasonry and how our culture is embedded in it and how, you know, and how that leads somehow to the Ark of the Covenant, you know? It's like, you know, you sound like you're in an Indiana Jones movie and they're looking at you like you got eight heads and you, I watched this video called Marshall Mathers. You ever heard of this?
Yeah, we've had him on the show. You know, pre 2012, that is. So now a lot of that can be discussed, of course.
we have him in the movie.
Yeah,
he makes an appearance, and that was actually kind of helpful when I was in my phase of waking up where I was like, oh my god, all this stuff is going on. It's dreadful. I it's so much that I need to talk to somebody, but, you know, my loved ones, you know, are still asleep and essentially, and are just, you know, zombies driving their cars to work. And so who do you talk to about it? And I watched this video, which is actually, I think, very kind of, he's got this real like mellow quality about him, which is, I find fascinating and hysterical. And he talks about how there's certain stages to catastrophism, where there's going to be a certain point where, you know, you are where I was, where you're, and a lot of people are, where they don't have anyone to talk to because they, you know, they don't, they just think they're crazy and they get dismissed. So he says, you know, just wait and prepare and get ready and just, you know, guide the people who aren't prepared, who have been asleep the whole time, who suddenly get a rude awakening, you know, guide them toward the exit. You're going to be the rational, you know, one during the chaos. And so I said, okay, that's basically this guy's journey. He becomes one with the fact that things change, and you know, you can't get scared by it. You can't worry about it, because then you just feed into, you know, the fear machine, and you get swept up in it, and you can't see the forest for the trees. You have to keep your head, and you have to just lead with your heart and accept the fact that there are people out there that aren't ready for this information. They aren't ready to go there, because it is, it's like this, it's overwhelming to see how deep and dark and freaky, our system is, our culture is, how, you know, if let's say, for instance, we live in a world where 9/11, you know, even if there's a 50% chance that 9/11 was an inside job, that JFK was an inside job, you know, do you really want to live in that world? Do you want to live in a world where we're cannon fodder? You know, do you want to live in a world where we don't matter, where you know, every single thing comes down to follow the money, which is just, you know, it's like, just, yeah, it comes down to the guy who paid the most for it. Sorry, you know, each and every single evil crime out there, everything perpetuated was maybe started out as a good thing, but, you know, ended up in someone's pocket.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's scary and it's overwhelming. And so there, it's good that there are outlets like this. And this is a movie that's for that person that is, you know, hopefully it, I've showed this movie in private screenings. I actually went to the conspiracy conference with Freeman and you know, and talked to the people who were, you know, preaching to the choir, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
And their reactions were either, oh my God, man, that's me. That was my story. You know, that happened to me. Or they say, you know, this is incredibly entertaining, you know. and then you go to people who, I've just seen a lot of different audiences, and they're either, they're people who are already on the tip and they're saying, man, I support this. This is great. Or they're saying, I don't know what this is. You know, I don't really know that journey, but now I'm interested to find out more about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found during the course of making this movie that more and more people are waking up. And the whole idea, I became a believer that, no, there wasn't going to be any army. Obviously we were making the movie past 2012.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
14 and very close to 2012, I came to the realization that no, it's not going to be Armageddon. That's sort of a test for us, and that it is a shift in consciousness. That Armageddon, the end, it's all the same thing. It's fear. It's propaganda. It's there to. Whether, you know, maybe it was, maybe the Mayan elders were sitting there and saying, wow, people are going to be really fucked up and corrupt, you know, during this time period in the near future, we should scare the shit out of them. We should scare them straight, essentially. So just the concept that they're, that this all might leave us, and this is all so very delicate, and it's really us, up to us to tend the earth. I think that there was a shift of consciousness in a lot of people, and I think that we're taking baby steps toward that, which is very encouraging. And it was also a shift in conscience. Like, people started getting a conscience. Like, you know, maybe you know, maybe we should start taking care of the earth. You know, maybe we should start questioning the way things are done,
right?
The government, because it's obviously not for our well-being, and you know, things like Occupy Wall Street popped up during the course of the making of the movie, and that's also in the movie, and because something's got to be done, and the movie is not about a violent revolution,
yeah.
Although that works sometimes. It doesn't go anywhere. And what the movie is suggesting is kind of a hundredth monkey theory, that if you get enough people, like Don Peyote is the 100th monkey. He was the guy that tipped the tide. He was the final guy that it needed to sway the mathematical equation toward the peace lovers, so that hopefully, you know, people start putting down their guns and picking up Eckhart Tolle books and trying to figure out, you know, maybe there's another solution, because we're about to hit a brick wall.
Now, obviously it's about an inner realization and an awakening per se. And so do you think that is something that's come about because of the overwhelming amount of information that is out there and accessible right now to people? Because I mean, I've always said that there's no curriculum, if you will, in this field, that there's no clear course or path that people take through all this stuff. Some people just stumble onto a YouTube video and then that's it. You know, that just was the tap that, you know, opened everything up, the drop that made the cup flow over, kind of thing. I mean, people learn about all the kinds of wonderful craziness that is out there, but you know, since everyone walks the path differently at different times as well. I mean, you said you've been kind of involved in at least the New World Order conspiracy stuff since more or less 9/11. But the longer this process goes, the more and more information is out there, the more data is there for people to sift through. And it's almost sometimes when I think about it, I wonder if it will be a saturation point at some point where people, there might be so much available that if you haven't already looked into some of these things a little bit, it might be so overwhelming to people that they literally will stay away. That's already the case, I guess, to a certain degree. But there's no clear path in that. It will be very organic and individual for each person, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's we're, you know, the technological age that we're living in, the information age that we're living in, was definitely very helpful for me in finding people like Freeman when making this movie. And I mean, the great thing about the internet is that you have to sift through it, because, and it's great because you're not getting one, you know, siphoned, you know, watered down, redacted, you know, story from your evening news anymore. Now you can go out and really be an investigator, and you have a choice whether you want to believe, you know, whether Kanye is in the Illuminati, you know, or whatever the fuck the, you know, the story is out there, or that if there are aliens on the moon, or if, you know, maybe there is something to, you know, the Aboriginal David Icke connection, you know, with the moon. You know, it's like you get to choose, and there's so much out there, and it is overwhelming. And I think that's what that's what happens in the story with Warren, that he doesn't know who to believe. He's trying to look to everybody else to find the answer. And really, it's each one of these, you know, wise men that he goes to basically says you have to start with yourself, look inside yourself. And, you know, that's the Buddhist journey. That's, you know, and it's all about looking within yourself and meditation and transform yourself within, and then you transform your reality, which is, you know, the secret, essentially, literally, that book, you know, the secret is all about that. It's an incarnation of that, where you can really, that your brain is more powerful than you realize, and that you can change the world with thought. I often think that it takes a little bit of thought and elbow grease, but there's definitely something to that. And I've spoken to Pinchbeck about this, and I think Freeman talks about it too, that the internet is kind of a crutch, that it's our longing for that which we had and lost. So there was a time many eons ago in our ancient human species where we didn't need the internet. We were just fully connected to our brothers and sisters, that we knew what they were thinking, and thus connected to the collective unconscious, and so that we did know basically what was going on the other side of the world, and we didn't need a computer for that. And somewhere along the lines, our third eyes got clouded. We lost touch with all of the inner energy that we all possess and how to control it, and we lost it. But we're so damn smart that we realize we lost it. We lost something. So we make this stuff like the internet so we can connect with each other again and connect with that knowledge cloud.
Yeah,
that's my personal opinion about it. And because we, you know, we went out to places like Peru in research of this movie, and you meet these shaman living out in the jungle, and they are you know, alchemists, essentially. They're working with San Pedro, and they're working with ayahuasca, and you walk up to those guys and they know you already. They almost know that you were coming. They know everything about you. They don't have the internet. They're learning it somehow intuitively, where, you know, they'll tell you where you're something that you don't know, like your great great grandfather was this kind of man, and you go back and you go to ancestry.com and you find out the guy was right. You know, there's something about the jungle and about closing yourself off from the web, and you open yourself up to the signals. You ever read the book The Alchemist?
Yeah, it's such an incredible noise out there that you you don't connect with the true stream of the flow of information that really is there. You know, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
You miss the signals from your gut. You miss the signals from your heart. And you miss opportunities and synchronicities, and you don't read them. And this movie taught me about that. Making this movie, that there were so many synchronicities during the course of making this movie that I thought this has to be real. And to the point where it happened so many times, where I was like, yes, of course, that happened at that exact moment because the universe was listening, you know. And I should just trust that this movie is going to make itself, which it did over, you know, the course of time that it did, but I never should have fretted at any point. It just the train was moving, and the universe just put tracks in front of us to keep it moving, and nudged us in the right direction when we had to. And so there is some kind of there's some kind of equation out there that we're all swimming in, and some people have learned how to control that science and control us simply because we've forgotten that it exists. But I think once you wake up, you start to realize, wow, there's certain connections out there that I'm not, that I'm getting signals for, but for some reason I'm not taking the right path.
Right.
And whether that is because of fear control, who knows, but at least there's a lot of people out there that just want to get to the bottom of it and are just good people and want to take control of their lives, that I think we may be able to shift this paradigm that we're in, where, we have to get to a point where everything is sustainable and we realize we are brothers and sisters and that we can live in a peaceful world, and everything can have everyone can have whatever they need and be happy. Right now there's only a very small percent of people out there with all the wealth, and the middle class is struggling to get by. This is just a microcosm in America, but I feel like that's rippling around the world. And if we don't get control of it, I think it's going to turn ugly, or it's going to it's just going to take care of itself.
What do you see the consequences of that would be? What would unfold, do you think?
It's just like a vicious cycle. Right now, it's almost like the Middle Ages. I mean, you can equate it to, on a massive scale, kings and queens having all the riches and telling everyone else to go eat cake. And, then what happens after that? People start getting their heads chopped off and people get ornery.
Yeah.
And this is just this vicious cycle that we're in. The poor are, unless the people who have most of the wealth, they're not stupid, obviously. They have to know that something must be done in order to control that, keep the status quo. But
we've had quite a few of bloody revolutions in the past. It's happened many times, just as you say. It's like this cycle that's repeating. Even the word revolution means to revolve, around in that circle, round and round we go, kind of thing. Do you think it has gotten better, or are we pretty much stuck in the same place?
Oh, I think that I think we're stuck in the same exact place. I mean, I think that just if you take into consideration the entire world, and how much poor there are, and how many people are starving, how many people don't have anything, and how many people, and it's just a small percentage of people who have the money and are just hoarding it, for some reason or another, just because, you have people like, the Koch brothers who are basically like the Godfather. You got presidents coming to them to beg for money.
And there are a lot more than them, by the way. The Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and there's a whole slew of families out there that are up there,
Sure, and they don't see people below them as human anymore. They don't tip their doormen. They don't take care of the people who are running around and you know, serving them.
So do you believe in like wealth redistribution or something like that? What needs to be done about this, do you think?
I think that if you went around and you polled all the people and kind of in the middle and say, how do you think it should be, that they'd probably come up with a very fair design, a nice sweeping bell curve of what the poor should have, what the middle class should have, and what the rich and I guess the super rich should have. And I think people would be happy with that. And then they would still have a chance to say, well, the American dream exists. I can ride my, this bell curve it's not that steep. I can still, you know, ride my skateboard up it without upending onto my ass because, you know, there's not enough of a, just basically hitting a brick wall of money that isn't theirs.
It's very, I mean, I've heard this come up a lot of times as well. And I always like to ask, who should oversee the redistribution, do you think? And what happens there, what I've seen as well is that you'd always get the same kind of administrative class in place that are taking advantage of the situation of overseeing that redistribution. And then you're kind of back in the same place again, right?
Well, that's the thing, man. You're inside of a fucking maze looking for a piece of cheese. And that is, and that's the problem. We got to look outside of the paradigm. And there have been people out there that have been squashed. And, you know, unlimited energy, unlimited, you know, resources, unlimited electricity. These geniuses have come up and said, "Hi, I'm Tesla. I would like to give free energy to the free world," quote unquote, and just totally squashed. You know, the electric car was made and that was squashed for big oil. And that's what has to happen. Someone has to finally turn around. So what's going to happen is that someone's going to turn around who has power and is going to say, I am not listening to this corporation anymore. I can't just keep throwing money into their pocket while the weather is going insane. We got to do something about this, and hopefully that will spark someone to say, check it out, money is a joke. It doesn't really exist. It's just a spell that's been cast on all of us, and it's really worthless, and it is just paper, and that there are other ways, and that will throw a lot of we'll throw a lot of our modern world into chaos. But I think that it can't sustain itself like this. It's just going to topple. You know, it's the fall of the Roman Empire. It can't work. You can't just keep on giving. You can't keep on working in the same paradigm. So there has to be someone out there that says, "Look, there is a way to head. Let's stop draining our natural resources. Look, this guy invented perpetual energy, you know, a century ago. Let's look into that. Let's really try and help each other get through this mess. Hopefully." Won't be too far gone. Hopefully we won't be thrust in too much chaos, and we'll be able to rise above the ashes.
Now, let me ask you this, and I've heard from a lot of, well, I mean, I like to say gurus, but there are a lot of people out there. They're talking about a new paradigm, you know, new spiritual awakening, and then there is a disconnect there for me, and they suggest that we go back like 150 years and adopt previous political systems, you know, looking towards socialism or utopianism. And I see that, I can't help to see that as a step back as opposed to, you know, breaking out of the political spectrum and actually moving forward. Have you noticed that too?
Yeah. I mean, you only, Like I like Epictetus. You know, he says a lot of cool stuff, and but he also says a lot of a lot of stuff that's just that doesn't work with our modern world. So you have to kind of put rocket boosters on the plane we're already flying, you know.
Right.
You have to kind of ease out. Like if we were to introduce something like perpetual energy, and they are kind of, you know, pushing it out there. You got some hybrid cars, and you have you have some electric cars showing up. And but if you have to phase one thing out, just so the people that are being phased out think that the new idea is their idea, and then they can get behind it.
Yeah,
you can't really just say let's erase this and let's look back 1,000 years. You have to deal with what's in front of you and deal with the leaders that are in place, and even try to change the mind, of some of these evil corporations to make this new technology, you know, worthwhile. Now, I don't, you know, what's crazy is it's everything is gray, because you have these corporations who are making, you know, weapons of mass destruction, and they're also making cereal, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly.
Eating the whole, so you have to try and, you know, get them to focus on one and make it worth their while and get into their heads and really, you know, you got to control the chessboard. There's a lot of egos in play. And that's the other thing. If they just picked up an Eckhart Tolle book and realized that jealousy, you know, murder, war, all of these come from the inability of the human species to control their ego. If you realize that that's the root of it, and all you got to, and change comes within yourself, you have to, you know, really kind of switch certain things in your personality. You get to choose if your ego gets bruised, you know, and you get to choose, and you get to the choice whether you act like a man or you act like a child. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're still learning that. And our great leaders are still learning that. So once we get a handle on that, then maybe it'll make a lot of this a lot simpler.
Yeah, well, it is an internal process, I think, for everybody. And I think we are in a time right now as well where there are a lot of people that would not be, don't know how to describe that really, but I guess ready would be the term for it. I mean, think about that. And we've talked with other guests about that on the program too, about free energy and everything else. Let's just say that that was something that was unleashed to everybody. It was, you know, democratized and everything else. And there is a tremendous amount of responsibility and power that comes with that. And I mean, at this stage, I think it would be radically abused, you know, by people who would seem to do their own thing with it and consequently, you know, develop weapons and everything else, all kinds of nastiness with that. So again, we're back to that kind of question. Or how are we judging people collectively to be ready even for something like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think we are. And that's why you gotta, that's why it's a dance. It's a tap dance trying to figure out ways to save the world. You know, it's, there's people who are not ready and who are still stuck in the past themselves, you know. Oh, well, I couldn't possibly work hand in hand with that country because, you know, we have that horrendous history with them. And the fact is that, you know, every country has fucked their neighbor in one way or another, or they've helped their neighbor in one way or another, and we're all guilty. And we have to get to a point where it's a new renaissance, where a new age of enlightenment, if you will, where we realize, guys, let's it's petty. Let's look toward the future. Let's make a clean slate. I know that a lot of people were hurt and a lot of people were killed and in trying to get to this point. but let's all try to get on the same page at least so we can survive the future. You know, people are always just living in sideways instead of going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are some ancient battles on this planet, though, that just doesn't seem to go away. You know, some conflicts that are, you know, continuing and continuing. And in most cases, maybe not that's true for everybody, but in most cases also, we're living in a world that was, you know, run by our forefathers or, you know, previous generations that did certain things. And unfortunately, now it seems like the current generations are also in a place where they have to carry the responsibility for that, although that's not necessarily true in these days, you know?
Yeah, we have to, you know, history has been rewritten so many times, we have to just create our own history. And yeah, it feels like we're not evolving, you know? It feels like, it feels like many people are, at least, taking a step toward forward evolution, that that there has been a change of consciousness. I do see that. And I think that there's going to be a schism between those people who really want to change the world for the better and those that want to keep the status quo. And that's, you know, that's a common thing that has happened throughout our history. And whether those people are going to go kicking and screaming or they're going to go gently into the night, you know, that's left to be seen, you know. Hopefully it's an easy transition. I know that a lot of the young kids today are, as many of them out there that are just zombies playing video games and just stuck on their iPads and don't know how to communicate with people.
Yeah.
There are those kids out there that are super intelligent that hear that, oh, there's a question that, you know, those buildings came down and all those people got killed and we still haven't gotten to the bottom of it. You know, that's wrong. And maybe we should do something about it. And there's kids at a young age who are being born into this world and seeing the controversy and seeing the conspiracy and starting on this journey at a really young age. And I think that's good because by the time they become leaders, then, you know, maybe they'll be strong enough to turn the tide for the better.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I was curious to know this. It's different for everybody. What do you think the ideal world would be? What kind of place would that be if all the, you know, quote unquote, bad stuff and bad people in the world disappeared? What would that look like, do you think?
Oh, wow. I think that it would be very close to, you know, Eden. You know, not that I'm super religious in any way, but people just, you know, this, we would have to change our whole way of thinking. We would, if people had enough money, or if people were living or didn't need money, they just would get up and go to the store and the guy behind the counter would say, "Hey, what do you need? Of course we have it. And we have more as well if you need for your family." And if the air was breathable, if there was no if corporations weren't fucking us in the ass and trying to hide their mistakes, if everything was out in the open, let's say there was some kind of mess up, well, let's be straightforward with it and talk to everybody about it and try to figure out how to clean it up and not bury it under red tape and hide our heads in the sand like ostriches. If that didn't exist, if there was no war, think about all of the so many of our resources going into weapons that never even get used, and that went to building homes and all that manpower went to focusing on going to other places. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still there listening.
Other places other than the Earth. I think that we would have already, you know, continued our, whatever you want to call it, manifest destiny of, you know, taking over different planets, having enough space for everybody. I think that if we stopped, I mean, it's like, it's so silly. I think about that Looney Tunes cartoon where, you know, Marvin the Martian blows up the Earth, but there's just a little bit of a patch left of it. And he puts his Martian flag in it. It's mine, you know. We're arguing over a grain of sand when there's an entire gorgeous beach before us and just sucking all the resources out of this tiny grain of sand when we could be focusing on, you know, putting resorts on Mars. And just, oh my God, wouldn't it be amazing if we just had a vacation universe, you know? If you could just go to your favorite planet and just have a good time and love everybody. And yes, there's outlets. There are outlets. You want to go and you want to, you know, we're super intelligent making these universes in our own living rooms where we can go to different worlds. And I think that if, you know, there's always going to be people out there that have certain anger issues that they have to get out, and certain, you know, certain DNA codes that they have in them from way, way back when their ancestor was some kind of, you know, crazy warrior throwing spears at some other guy and chopping their heads off. And that's, you know, that sticks around in the DNA. And you can, you know, we're so close to having a holodeck, you know, where you can just go and get out your aggressions and not kill anybody in real life. And then, you know, by that time you'd have enough space where people wouldn't be stepping on each other's feet.
Are we, do you think we're overpopulated, as some say?
I think that, you know, I don't know. I don't know. People like Freeman laughs at the idea. He said, you know, that there's more, there's so much space that, you know, to say that there isn't enough space for everybody is the equivalent of saying that the Earth is flat, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe he's right. Maybe there is enough space for everybody, you know. But everyone wants the ideal,
the prime place. Real estate. Yep.
Real estate.
Yeah.
And if that's the situation, if people feel like they're getting their toes stepped on, then maybe it's worth looking into some prime real estate somewhere else, you know. And I think it's about time that we really get to work trying to explore the rest of the universe, or at least be up and up with our civilization about what might be going on around the corner, which is a whole other story. But I think that, you know, the possibilities are endless, and we're just going to die. If we're on this course, we're gonna hit a brick wall. The poor are gonna revolt. You can just see it coming. You can just feel it in the air. You know, there. And then the people that are supposed to keep the order will just be apathetic and.
To me, it feels like the more the more the technology comes along as well, you have that a lockdown of that where to this point, it's almost like it's been a relationship long coming in development, if you will, where those who are, you know, out in the street and want to protest against this is the perfect enemy and opportunity for the powers that be to develop their technology and test it on people and to, you know, in their reasoning, of course, keep the peace, right? So it's a very interesting polarity that's building up in front of our eyes here, I think.
Yeah. It seems like we're kind of just cattle being herded into the pen where exactly where they want us to be. And we're just, you know, eating the gruel, and the the walls are closing in, and you know, next thing you know, we're in some ghetto, like the ghettos in Warsaw, and we're just, you know, sitting there, and we don't even realize that we're in a prison paradigm, that, you know, and a police state, and many people believe that we already are in a police state, that we're, you know, just between our cell phones and how many video cameras are out there, and, you know, the fact that yes, we can talk about this stuff freely, but it's being listened to by certain people who could at any moment, you know, dub us non-patriotic and
put us in the slammer.
Put us in the slammer, you know, just our words and our thoughts and just trying to wake people up.
Free speech is under threat, you know, with political correctness. You can't say what you want or, you know, think what you want almost even.
Yeah. So when, you know, it just seems like it's a lot of the stuff I read in 1984 is happening.
Yeah.
And it's scary. It's scary because I always come back to 9/11. If they can just throw away, let's say it is an inside job, if they could just throw away that many lives, then, you know, we're cheap. You know, we're nothing to them. And at any moment they could turn on you, and you couldn't do anything about it, and they would have all of the resources to blacklist you, to make you oh, there they are. Oh my God, they're coming.
So in your view then, Dan, who is behind the plan here so far, what you've you know, looked into, and just, I guess, your gut feeling, and to a certain extent, what who's running the ship here?
Well,
and we're all trying to find out that, by the way, so I'm not, you know, expecting you to to have a perfectly outlined plan with that. But what do you feel? What's your hunch?
I think that, again, you got to follow the money. So when 9/11 happened, and I thought there's something fishy going on here, I looked and I looked at the architecture, and I said, this is a, I'm looking at a controlled demolition here, and you know, who are the masters of architecture? And then you look into, very quickly, you learn how Freemasonry is embedded in our culture, and you know, from there you branch off into Skull and Bones and CIA you know, who's, and you hear people like Al Gore on Letterman. I remember this interview Letterman had with Al Gore, and Letterman said, so you were the vice president. How much do you think you knew going on? You knew, how much do you think you knew what was going on behind the scenes? And Gore very honestly said 40%. And then, which was, you know, the audience kind of went quiet. And then Letterman said, well, Jesus, like, how much do you think the president knew? And Gore said 50%. So if there's 50% out there that our own president doesn't know, then, and who, and the people that they're answering to are the people that are paying them and control their pocketbooks, and, you know, you just follow the money. You learn who the corporations are owned by. And then you start to figure out, you know, all the different, are all these guys that have this money, are they connected to secret societies? Are they connected to, quote unquote, Illuminati? Are they meeting, are they having secret meetings, to discuss the fate of the world? Yes. You know, yeah. And you can slowly, you know, put, and you can slowly put a list together. And, you know, I don't like to name names because, as you know, I'm so curious what's going to happen with my, you know, my quote unquote, acting, you know, Hollywood career once this movie comes out.
Right. Well, I did, please finish that thought, but I did want to ask you about that a little bit more later, because I know our audience would burn me if I don't ask you some questions about that too, but please go ahead and finish that thought.
Well, the thought is like, well, once we got Anne Hathaway on board, once we got Josh Duhamel on board, and Jay Baruchel, and these people who, you know, Anne had went down to occupy Wall Street. There's a lot of people who are in the industry, who are my friends, who I think are willing to take a risk to be in a controversial movie like this, because I think that these are people that have woken up, and often the artists are the ones who wake up first in these situations. And they want to get the word out that, you know, maybe it's time that we start to take control back.
What did the other actors in the movie think about? Maybe, I mean, we went pretty deep in some of the other topics here today, but more generally about some of the things that's touched upon in the movie itself. Are they kind of on the level in that regard, or more kind of, what is this?
Oh yeah. Like Jay Baruchel is one of the biggest conspiracy theorists I ever met. He's had a hell of a lot to teach me about. And he's just an endless wealth of theories. And, so he was already on board. Anne was on board. Josh Duhamel, he plays, this kind of like Robin Hood, freegan in it, you know, living off the grid and living in trees and you know, foraging for his own food, and teaches my character how to live off the land and outside of, and off the grid. And, he loved it. He was on board from day one. So, you know, everyone who obviously stepped up and got involved with the movie are like Wallace Shawn, I know, is a big, you know, intellectual, loves talking about, you know, what's really going on behind the scenes. So each one of them in their own way, I think, really wanted to dabble in this world and appreciated the world of the movie. Yeah.
Now, okay, let me ask you this then. As I said there, I think many of our audience would love to know a little bit more about your view of Hollywood. And as you get into some of the topics that you do have, you know, is there an agenda there tying with symbolism? There's a different set of programmings going on there. And certainly, I mean, in no way do you represent everybody that worked there just because you've, you know, made the movies you have. But what's your view of it? Is there any truth to it? Have you looked into, you know, anything from, well, it's commonly referred to as Illuminati symbolism in the movies. I would probably say it's a different kind of symbolism when you actually really look at the true secret society of the Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. It's kind of a little bit different there with the owl and everything else. But still, nonetheless, people will understand what I'm getting at when I ask that question. So what do you make of it? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to deny that there's a hell of a lot of pyramid imagery, hell of a lot of all-seeing eye imagery that is everywhere, and it's the little trademark hidden in so many movies that are your favorite movies. It's staring at you right at the on the back of your dollar bill. It's ingrained in, it's so ingrained in our society and our architecture that it's invisible. And once you see it, it suddenly you realize it's everywhere, and that's the they love to wave that in our face because they think that we are blind, that we can't see it, that it is subliminal, even though they put it out there on everything. Talk to Freeman, and you look at the Time Warner logo, and it's essentially, you know, it's essentially the Eye of Horus with a big swirly hypnotic, you know, thing, and you're just like, I see that when I'm driving in traffic, and I see a Time Warner, you know, truck drive up, and I see the Eye of Horus with a swirly hypnotized, you know, eye there, like,
yeah.
I sit there and I go, my God, like, how can you not see it? How can you not see that it's just everywhere? It's because it is. It's the language we speak. It's the architecture. It's the car we drive. It's the money we have in our hand. It's everywhere. You know, these are the people who created this structure of this hierarchy, this pyramid structure of living that we're stuck in, where there's levels, and as you work your way up, the people at the top have the most power, and the people at the bottom are the foundation for the people at the top. And it's everywhere. I mean,
sorry to interrupt again down there, but let's look at in the actual pictures themselves then in that regard. If that's intentional, who do you think puts it in there? Is it the writer, the set designer, the producer, suggestions from other people maybe? What do you think?
Well, it's either a hell of a lot of people. Either there's a hell of a lot of people who are in charge of making that film who are in that particular secret society, so they're just signing their work, or they're people who are in the know and realize this stuff is going on, like Don Peyote, and they kind of want to wink at it. So they throw a version of that symbology in their movie. So either they're making fun of it, or they're paying homage to it. It's out there, and a lot of the artists are going to be the people who realize it first. So they're going to put it in their work, and then there are people out there that don't even realize what it is. They just think it's cool, so they
sure, yeah,
they just put it out there. So
it's a kind of a feedback loop. There's something that kind of, well, I would say that's really happened with the music industry use of this kind of symbolism, that it's caught on for the reasons that, you know, a lot of the conspiracy folks out there, they you know, it becomes a viral marketing campaign at some point, and then people feed back into that and say, oh, look at that, we got to use more of that because, you know, that gets it out there. So, you know, to a certain extent, it's difficult to know, all right, what is the true intention here, you know, even if any, and where was the inception, and what is just kind of marketing at this stage, you know?
Right, and what, and is it, you know, if you really believe that this stuff has some kind of hypnotic, mass hypnotic charm on people, then you know, what kind of distilled version of you know, black magic are you using in your ad that you have no fucking clue about, you know?
Yeah. And that's not very smart, is it, to use things that are, you know, a talismanic you know, properties to it, very, really ancient powerful symbols, and using it in a kind of a casual way like that, you know?
And I love rock and roll, and there's a hell of a lot of hell imagery and you know, the devil horns, you know, when you're rocking out, and yeah, it's even the peace sign, which is a huge symbol in Don Peyote, one of the symbols is kind of the busted finger peace sign, where you have this finger who's, these fingers that are held in a peace sign by these stints and gauze because they've been broken and mangled. And even you know, Freeman has a thing with the peace sign that it's actually the V, and there's a whole, you know, two V's and W and all this, you know, that's a whole other.
Crowley gave it to Churchill, who popularized it. Yeah, there's an interesting backstory there.
Yeah, and John Lennon made it popular, you know, even though he was just trying to spread peace, you know. So this mangled peace sign is our, my way of saying, we've beaten it up. We've taken the old idea of it, which may have been negative in some circles, and kicked it around a bit, broke it down, and made it our own. So it's in a way it's new, and it means in our situation, it means that peace is durable. That peace is badass. That you can beat the shit out of Gandhi, and he'll keep on coming back for more. Real Buddhist frame of mind, trying to make peace more badass and even stronger than those that might lash out with violence.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I digress, but.
No, it's all good. Now, let me ask you about the drugs a little bit. The character's drug use is pretty consistent in the movie. Is that a prerequisite to absorb some of the topics, do you think, that you go into the film? Weed, ayahuasca, peyote, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think that those who... even though I'm trying to cut back my pot use, I think that weed, and now that it's becoming legal, I think that it's interesting that there is a correlation between those that are waking up and pot use, that kind of greases the wheels of the pineal gland. And doesn't allow it to get fogged over and forget, that it keeps the synapses open.
So it adds to clarity.
Yeah, I think so. That used in the correct way, your brain becomes so wired and more perceptive, and more able to receive certain signals, And then you could bump it up a notch with stuff like, ayahuasca and peyote that reveal to you, whether it's an inner journey or taking away certain the veil that is in front of us. What we see in front of us is only a very small spectrum of reality. That there's a tremendous amount going on, just dreams alone. There's so much more chemically going on in our minds that we have forgotten about, and that these things remind us of, and that they are tools that help us go very deeply inside of ourselves and help us uncover many of these mysteries that we're trying to solve, simply because it shows you, it makes you feel what it's like to be, in some certain cases, one with the universe. Now you can talk about that concept, but stuff like ayahuasca will show you. It will break you down. And it will get to the heart of the energy that is inside of you, and help you realize that you're just a one cell in an entire, bloodstream of stuff that's going on. And that is incredibly humbling, and that is definitely worth trying. And that's what a lot of these, spirit journeys that shamans go on. They take peyote and they go out into the desert and they find the answers of the universe inside themselves. And we're all, we have the answers to everything floating inside of our minds, if we are able to quiet out the outside world long enough to find out about it. But people are just, happy and content with never doing that their whole lives, never just living in this one small spectrum of reality, and dying totally unfulfilled,
Yeah.
longing for knowing that, maybe there's something else out there, but and never reaching it. And I think more and more people, through stuff like ayahuasca, there's a whole movement that they're getting in touch with themselves spiritually, and then getting in touch with their, fellow humans because of it, realizing that life is a lot more precious and special than they were living it. Yeah, the other thing I learned in my research, and that I learned firsthand, was I did I was doing this I was on the internet and I was looking up some CIA stuff, and I think it was David Wilcock had a story about this ex-CIA guy who was they were trained he was training to do lie detector tests. Stop me if you heard this one. And it was back in the 60s, and they were doing these this they were training the guy who does the lie detector tests.
Yeah, Cleve Baxter was his name.
Oh, you're on it.
Yep.
And obviously, so in that session, he puts the he's just messing around, and he puts the nodes, or whatever they are, the little, temple heartbeat pulse pasties, and he puts them on the a plant that's in the room, and he gets very similar response from the plant that he would from a human being. And everyone behind the two-way mirror said, "You just never happened. Shut it down." And you know, hence the government, the people in power, thinking that we're too stupid or too naive to or maybe it's fear of, you know, capital, you know, corporations who they want to keep going by cutting down trees, and you know, that these are beings, you know, these plants have personalities, they have families, you know, and to keep the status quo, shut it down, don't tell anybody about that, let's keep on making toilet paper. And that was presented to me in the form of ayahuasca, where I realized, holy shit, it's true. It's a life form.
Everything is alive. Yeah.
Everything is alive. Everything is energy, and the energy is connected. And once you get a load of that, you start to feel incredibly tiny, but so tiny that you feel like, you know, a raindrop in a sea that you're totally a part of. And certain things get put into perspective, like, why argue anything? You know, why get mad at yourself? Why get mad at anyone? You know, why would you take that information away from humanity? I think if more people knew, and then you have you know, movies like Avatar, which are basically like throwing that in your face. They're saying, so you know, that's almost like renegade Hollywood, where you have artists who are insiders, who are, I think Spielberg is one of these guys, I think Lucas is one of these guys, who are in the inside and are trying to warn us about the dark side, who are trying to tell us, yes, you know, that tree does have a personality, and we would all be a lot better if we knew that, if we knew that on a regular basis, that there is an energy that connects us all, and that maybe, you know, your religion isn't stupid, you know, maybe my religion isn't completely right, but maybe there is something that connects all of them, that yes, there is an energy, some higher thing out there that connects all things, that you can tap into and have, you know, the knowledge of the universe just by meditating. Like, imagine a world where people were able to harness that. And I think that long ago we had that, and we've lost it. And those that are in power they want that for themselves. You know, they want that information, and they want to control us.
Yeah, well, it's as you said before, kind of the cattle analogy. It serves to, you know, keep the cows domesticated and, you know, docile in that environment, so they don't have a drive and desire to kind of break out of the pen, if you will. But I guess with the realization of that as well, on top of it, of the more animism, that kind of realization that everything is alive, there also comes a consequence when you understand that you can't live outside of that realm that we born into, where we are such a part of the sphere here, of the biosphere, that we are in need of everything that is alive, of its resources, of the food that grows here and everything else. And I guess what you're getting at too is that today there's no thought about those things for the most part, but with the realization of that, you will get a different relationship to your environment around you, right?
Yeah, and realize that we're so much more powerful than we realize, than we're, meant to believe. We're told that we're insignificant, that we have to rely on not on our fellow man, but on the government and someone else to feed us and clothe us and give us shelter, and that every person, if they just connected to the flowing energy that's around us, it sounds like the force,
Sure, yeah.
everyone connects to their midi-chlorians, then true. I mean, these artists are trying to tell us something that if we connected that we would have the answers that we're looking for, essentially, that we would be able to solve world hunger, and we would be able to change the world, and shape it in our with our own will, and that it might be a better place if we came at it from that humble frame of mind, that we're no better than, this tree that we're chopping down, that everything has a place. We're just cogs in a gigantic churning cosmic machine, and that there's a balance to that,
Yeah.
and that if we get out of balance, it will put us back in balance, whether we like it or not. And
Well, see that exactly. That's what I think. I think that there is a, even to that extent, with resources, or even in regards to overpopulation, that I think that, and I'm not saying we should be stupid about it and not, think ahead, of course, but when and if that becomes the reality, we mankind are going to know that pretty quick, because we won't be able to live, we can't live outside of those resources. I mean, as you said before, we're not space traveling. We're not, as far as I know, out there yet. Okay, there's a conspiracy, the secret space program, but let's not talk about that right now. The idea that we can go out in space and just grab, rocks and minerals and resources out there. It is, it's confined within the biosphere as it is right now, and we're stuck with that, and we need to adjust to those circumstances. And that's, I think, also why one of the reasons why we find us in the situation we will. But if there was something that was running out, or if we were too many people on the planet, then it would be a, as you said, a natural, we would be smacked back in place by nature, pretty much,
Oh yeah, I mean it's happening. Nature's getting restless, and there's consequences for our actions.
Yeah, exactly. Now, a few more questions for Dan before we begin to wrap here, up here in a little bit. Do you think that there is a dark side, let's say, to the information consumption, to the awakening process per se, a shadow side? Now, I might not necessarily only talking about the mental health aspect as the character goes through in the movie as well, although that's a big part of it. But any other aspects that are, shadow side, extent of traps of falling into and everything else as you've experienced it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, I mean, it's so much like the force. It's silly. It's, fear leads to anger, which leads to the dark side. So if you get too caught up in fearing the future of, oh my God, this is so overwhelming, quote unquote, new world order is about to pounce. They've already pounced. It's just a matter of time, before it's World War II all over again, and they're shipping us out in FEMA camps,
Right.
whatever you can find out there that people are scared of. If you start believing in that, and you start, digging a hole for yourself and your family to live underground, with your little slice of your backyard, and if you buy into that, you're only perpetuating and helping manifest that world. And who the hell wants to live in a scary world like that? Yes, maybe you survive it, but then it's you know, then it's Apocalypse Now. You know, then it's, you don't want to. Who wants? I would much rather try to put the brakes on and focus on getting to the point where we're thinking more positively and thinking together and trying to, instead of closing off and burying our head in the sand and really waking up and looking around and trying to find answers to these problems. And that's what that's what they want. You know, if they want their plan to work, where the only way it's going to work, where they remain the people in power, if they remain the people with the money, the only way they're going to control that and control us is through fear. So if we stop worrying and say, you know, they need us in order for that to work, we're more powerful than we realize. We're smarter than they think we are. If we band together, we really can make a difference. There is power in numbers, and there are alternate ways to get things done that don't have to involve violence. And I think they're happening. And I think that people are realizing protesting is useful, but maybe it's not really successful in a lot of arenas because they've seen it before. They're ready for it. There's got to be a new way of going about this. And I think it's the real secret is meditation. I think that looking inside ourselves, changing ourselves from the inside out, that's going to help manifest a better destiny for us all. If there are less people sitting and planning on stealing from somebody, and less people sitting and playing, you know, violent video games. There's a place for video games or whatever, but if they're not playing 24/7 and really putting their energies into trying to find some of these answers, how can we make the world a better place? I think that I think we'll find it, and I think that the government is going to have to listen because, like I said, they need us. They need us in order to for their plans to work, and we sway them more than we think we do. And that those that are controlling the government, they're going to have to realize, well, you know, damn, I really want these people to be eating my product. And they're not, because they're sensing that it's not good for them, that it's poison.
Right.
Yep. And they're going to change their minds as well. And it's just, it's kind of like spiritual economics. Like,
well, it's the choice that we make as where we put our support and focus and attention as well, right? As an individual, it's been said before, but you vote with your dollar, right? In that regard, I mean, it's the personal responsibility of these times right now, where there is so much information available, where you can find out not everything, but practically a lot of stuff about the corporations that are out there, and ultimately just ask ourselves, all right, is this all good? Is this something I want to support? If so, yeah, go ahead, do it. If not, just, you know, take back that support for that structure. And eventually, I think that if people judge it on that level, eventually the things that are, you know, ethical and moral and do things in a good way, they will naturally stand on their own, and those people should be supported and then should be, you know, continued in their work, right? So it is pretty simple in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I feel like that's the only way that I can wrap my head around it right now, because I'm a lover, I'm not a fighter. I'm going to try and wake people up with art, and I'm going to try and, get people informed at least, to try and change themselves for the better. I'm just trying to wake people up, and because I got a little girl, I got a family, and I'm only one person. That's why I gotta rely on my friends to come and make these movies with me, these little shouts into the universe, that that's the best that I can do, because I don't know how to make a I don't know how to make a perpetual energy device, all I know is how to make people laugh and how to make people cry, and so that those are the tools that I use, and everybody has their own special tools and abilities that they can harness, and if and just focus on, if listen, if you want the world to be a better place, then try to rally the forces. Don't just go on and drink your bottle of water and continue to just stay on the track that they want you to stay on, to perpetuate the system and the machine, and it's then you that's not a, in my opinion, that's not a life well lived. You owe it to your species to try and educate yourself and try to make things better for everybody and our children and our children's children. And it's really about that. I used to be a big fan of the Jetsons,
right?
growing up, and that took place, that cartoon was made a while ago, and we don't have half of that stuff. That was we were fed a dream.
Yeah, the Church of Progress told us that we'd have flying cars by the year 2000, right?
Yeah, and robots that had personalities and waited for us hand and on a hand.
Exactly. You just push a button, we'll get everything we want.
Yeah, and not that that's the best way of living, but they're really good at feeding us a false reality. So hey, you just keep on doing what you're doing, and you're gonna get this, and you're gonna be a millionaire, and everyone's gonna you keep on buying this product, and everything will be just fine. You just let us handle everything. It's like, oh, I just gotta sit back, and in a few years I'll have a jetpack, and it's not like that. We're still very much in the Stone Age, in a lot of ways, and
Yeah.
yeah. So I hopefully this movie, I'm hoping that it's going to, because it's the sugar with the medicine. There's a lot of laughs in this movie. It's a dark comedy. There's a lot of people in it that you recognize from regular mainstream media that are in this crazy, conspiracy, offbeat psychedelic movie. And I'm hoping and that really is revolutionary, because it's talking about a lot of these things that are said, it's talking very openly about a lot of these things that are said in secret and hushed tones, and I just want to get a conversation going. I want to get it out there. I don't want there to be another 9/11. I don't want there. I don't want to live in a world that where that happens. And so you know, that's my mission with this movie.
Right. Well, thank you, Dan, for talking with us about the film Don Peyote and sharing your perspective as well. Very, very insightful. So tell us when and where people will be able to see the film, you know, if they're curious, want to find out more. And also give us your website for people who want to check out more about your other work and whatever else you have on there.
Yeah, come tweet at me. I'm at Mr. Dan Fogler. Yeah, at Mr. Dan Fogler. And then from there you could find my website and find information about Don Peyote. Don Peyote, the trailer is out. Just type it in on the internet and it'll pop up. It's everywhere at this point. It's on it's on Yahoo, and it's on Ain't It Cool News, and those are some of the big sites that it first showed up on, and now it's basically everywhere. The movie comes out in May in movie theaters. It's going to be on VOD, Netflix. Look for it then. The premiere will be sometime, probably April. And I'm psyched, man. This is my baby. And it's a great film. It's really entertaining and hysterical and eye-opening, and the cast is marvelous. And it really shows a wider spectrum of my abilities, and it's got something from everybody. It's, you know, it's got big musical numbers in it. It's got these very cool interviews, and it's got some really trippy visuals. You know, it's I like to say it's like Annie Hall meets Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So if that doesn't pique your interest, I don't know what will. So I'm super psyched about that. I got a bunch of other stuff coming out too next year. My first movie, Hysterical Psycho, is coming out on Netflix around the same time as Don Peyote is out. So Studio 13, my film company, is gonna get some hits, and that's exciting. And I got this graphic novel called Moon Lake, which is out there. There's volume one and volume two, and that is this place called Moon Lake, which is basically a crossroads of many different brands of evil, and it's haunted. There's aliens, there's Sasquatches. It's basically a conspiracy theorist wet dream. So that's another something else to check out. And that's it. That's all I'm going to say now. There's a bunch of stuff coming out this year with my face on it. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
All right, great. Well, don't miss Freeman as well in the film as well. We'll keep our eyes out for that. But in the meantime, we'll say thank you, you know, for coming on, and we'll have some links up to the film, to your website, to the Twitter feed and such, so people can check that out for themselves on redicecreations.com. Well, thank you for talking with us, Dan. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, brother.
All right, there you go. You know, we have some great programs coming up on Monday. Richard Dewhurst on the ancient giants who ruled America, the missing skeletons, and the great Smithsonian cover-up. We have Ben Davidson from Suspicious Observer to talk more about space weather, sunspots, and possibility of an oncoming ice age. And then we have, to extend that conversation, Robert Felix back with us again to further pour salt on the ice age wound, if you will, as it seems possible that we're entering into, right now, another Maunder minimum. We also have Sophia Smallstorm on the conspiracy behind the Sandy Hook shootings, William Lynn on occult science dictatorship, John King on the murder of Princess Diana. We also have William Mullen on the electric universe, plasma cosmology, and the origins of Egyptian hieroglyphics. Seems interesting. And then we have Kong Pop Yuyen on evidence of space weather-induced natural disasters. And of course, in between these shows, we also have a couple of Radio 314 shows coming up. And next there, we have Gregory Smith and John Rappaport on the over-medication of America. And then we also have Ben Shapiro on the bias of the media and the film industry. That's going to be really interesting. And, well, you guys know that we feature Radio 314, right? You know, lately, every week, we've slipped in a 314 show. Well, check it out. If you're not familiar with it, you'll find the link to the show from redicecreations.com. Or you can just go directly to radio314.com, subscribe to the RSS feed, or just catch the new episodes from the Red Ice Radio Archive. Also, of course, don't forget to sign up for a membership with us at redicemembers.com. Get full access to our archives. We have some amazing shows for you guys there. Tons to learn, tons to discover, and exciting stuff. All right, we'll wrap up our discussion for this time. We'll talk to you in just a few days. Stay warm and keep asking those questions. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.